This is Athens News Matters for Thursday, September 17th. We have a special edition of the show today. My guests are from the University of Georgia's Center for Teaching and Learning. We'll discuss Open Education Resources, or OER. We'll have an overview of what the center does and the resources it provides. All that and much more next on Athens News Matters. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley with WUGA. Today's panelists include Eddie Watson, Director for the Center for Teaching and Learning, Sherry Clouser, the Assistant Director of Learning Technologies, and Deanna Cozart, the Coordinator of Open Education Resources. And so I want to thank everyone for joining me today. And I want to, I guess, start with you first, Eddie, because you're the director. If you could just sort of give me an overview of what you do. There's just so much. If you click on your page, your website, it's overwhelming what you guys handle. But, I mean, obviously, you've got a handle on it. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I think the short version is that we support instructional excellence for the university. So we're doing everything we can to help faculty and GTAs, graduate teaching assistants, be as effective as possible in the classroom. So really everything that we're doing is in the service of student learning. So we have lots of programs for faculty, lots of programs for TAs. We also support the enterprise level instructional technologies at the institution. We also have a number of pilots going to support sort of innovative new approaches to using learning technologies. The classroom technologies, we play a significant role in making sure all of the AV systems work in all of the classrooms. And we also have a video production team and a video studio. We do a lot of recording of video, photography, things like that, really pretty much focused within that domain of instruction.
Wow, so quite a bit.
Yes.
You said you have some pilot programs. That's what sort of pilots are you working on?
Well, right now we're working with ePortfolios. So there's a tool called Digication, and that's the tool we're piloting this current semester. But we're looking at how ePortfolios can be used to improve learning and to assess the effectiveness of programs. So there are pilots going on within pharmacy and the law school looking at assessment. I'm using it actually in my graduate level college teaching course this semester, but there are a number of little pilots going on so we can just sort of see how well that tool works for these various purposes.
So you're a little microcosm, and then what works, you take it broader.
That's the plan with the pilot. So if we find that our pilots are successful, we look at broadening the adoption across campus. If a pilot's not so successful, then we've learned a valuable lesson and we know to maybe revisit that in the future.
And Sherry, you are Assistant Director of Learning Technologies. Lengthy title. And explain a little bit about that, what you actually do.
Mm-hmm. Well, Eddie mentioned that one of the things that we do at the center is provide support and to facilitate the management of some of the enterprise-wide learning technologies. So this includes our learning management system, which is called eLearning Commons, or ELC. And I support faculty one-on-one, but I also support others who support faculty. So we have a team across campus that can work with faculty in the different colleges and schools on that eLearning Commons, or ELC. And then other enterprise technologies like student response systems, commonly known as clickers in the classroom. Also, we have another pilot going on of WordPress. It's a local blogging platform and collaborative web tool. We also have a new video platform that we've just released. So my role is mainly to make sure that those are going strong on campus, the faculty know about them, know how to use them, and know how to get help with them.
Right. Now, you say you support people who support faculty. So I guess what would that be?
Sure. So, for instance, with our new video platform, Kaltura, we're bringing that in and I'm learning it, but also other support professionals across campus are learning how to use that platform. And so I bring the support professionals together for train the trainer type events. And we have a community of practice, really, where we can share issues that have come up and, hey, how are you helping your faculty to learn this? And how are your students coming coming up with new ideas for using these technologies. So it's really creating that community of practice and sharing the load of the support.
And I know there's a big load. I mean, at an institution like this, there's so much going on. So it's nice, I guess, for faculty and anyone in a teaching capacity to know that there's somebody there to support them.
Absolutely. And I also act as kind of a point or a communicator with the vendors. So if we need to bring Kaltura in to do some sessions, I'll be the point of contact with them. And also in some cases, a point of contact with other institutions in the university system that may be using that same technology or considering using that same technology. So we have the smaller community of practice here across the institution, but I also participate across the system in that community as well.
And Deanna, you are coordinator of Open Education Resources. We touched on this briefly before, but there was so much to it that we really needed to go more in depth. And actually, you call it OER, so we don't have to say the long title. Tell me what that is.
So an open educational resource is something that is available. It could be teaching material, learning material, research study, anything like that, that is going to be freely distributed and available for people to acquire at no cost. And the other part of that is
no cost. That's just pause right there.
Yes, yes.
Because it's so nice to be able to actually get something like that.
Yes. And so there are a lot of different initiatives within that. Here at the Center for Teaching and Learning, we're really trying to work with faculty to consider using some of the OERs that are available with their classes instead of a traditional textbook. And another piece that makes it really appealing is if there's not something that exactly fits with what you want to do in your class. One of the characteristics of an OER is that you can revise it and redistribute it. So if you're wanting to teach U.S. history and you feel like part of it is incomplete, you can take pieces of what's already been created and then adapt that and revise it to meet the needs of your individual class. So there's really a lot of customization opportunities with OERs that you don't always necessarily have with a traditional textbook.
So there are multiple benefits, both for faculty and for the students.
Absolutely. And I think most of the time people kind of hear the cost piece and immediately think, okay, well, this is great for students, but if I'm a faculty member and I've been teaching this, I have the book that I use, I like this that I use, I think that's probably a harder sell. But I do think that the customization piece is really worth considering. And then, too, if you look at an OER and look at the quality of that and see that the quality holds up with a textbook that may cost $200, $300, why not give it a try and at least see if you can have that kind of cost savings for your students?
Right. And I know, Eddie, you mentioned before just some of the figures. The savings really are tremendous.
Yes, they really are. We're at a point now where looking at the work that the Center for Teaching and Learning has done, as well as other faculty around campus, including Deanna before she came to join the CTL, and we're just under $2 million in savings looking at from 2013 through this current academic year. So the savings have been quite significant, and they continue to grow really without any new investment from the faculty or from the university, just as long as faculty continue to use the free textbook the next semester.
You heard firsthand, Deanna, from students because you were faculty fairly recent.
Yes.
And what were some of the things that you were getting from students?
You know, when I collected data and feedback from my students, it was really interesting. Of course, they all said they loved that it was free. They actually applauded, you know, at the first day of class when I announced it. And then at the end of the semester, they applauded again, which was wonderful. But what I ended up finding in reading through their feedback, they also really, really appreciated the fact that it was something that was customized for the course. I think for them, that kind of gave them a little more incentive to do the readings and to be a little more engaged with the course materials, knowing that I had taken the time to pull and combine and put things together for them. And so just a few of the quotes, if you don't mind me reading.
Oh, no.
I brought some from some of my students. So one said, "I read everything that was asked, and I loved not having to buy a book. It saved me money that I really needed, and I had no issues with the readings online. Great setup." And several others, another student said, "The reading materials for this course were amazing. I'm not just saying that because I didn't have to pay for a textbook, although that was nice, but because I could be certain that what I was reading was both relevant and the best source of information for the topic."
So it seems like they appreciate, like Absolutely. You said, the customization.
Yes. And, you know, another advantage to using OER materials is the accessibility. So every single student has access to the material on day one. And we know that historically, when you're using a traditional textbook, you may have students who can't afford to buy it at the very beginning of the semester. Sometimes those financial aid checks can be slow, or that money may have to go to cover other upfront costs, like paying for housing or meal plans. And so sometimes students would have a lag, needing to wait for their first paycheck from a job or something like that. And so this really levels the playing field for students from all backgrounds, because then you don't have a student who may be working who's penalized from day one of the class. Instead, you say, no, everybody's got it. You don't have to worry about keeping up with this. A lot of times, OER material is available online. You can get it in print as well. But typically, the online delivery really gives you a lot of flexibility with access as well.
I see both Sherry and Eddie really nodding, because you are behind the eight ball if you're that student who doesn't have the money up front. And that happens all the time. Rent comes first,
sure.
Then the meal plan. I mean, you have to be practical, and then maybe weeks later you can think mm-hmm. about getting all of your textbooks. So both of you are nodding. You think that's obviously a value.
Yeah, I think when you drive through downtown and you see the new luxury student apartment buildings, and you see some of the very nice vehicles that some students have, you get this faulty notion that all of our students are well-to-do or don't worry mm-hmm. about their finances. And I think that's false. We know from many of our students that they may not take a class in the semester that they want to take it because they don't have enough money to buy the textbook that semester. So this is happening here at the University of Georgia, and I think we sometimes don't see that or don't think about that because of the things that that are going up downtown.
Right. You see so many students who don't think about money, and that's mm-hmm. great.
That is great for them.
But there are so many others who, unfortunately, do start out behind. And, you know, if you don't have that book, you are at a disadvantage if you're weeks behind.
Yeah, the University of Georgia participates in a nationwide survey called the National Survey of Student Engagement, often called NESE for short. And the last iteration of this was 2012, really, at our institution. And during that survey, or as a result of that survey, we learned that about a third of our students report that after all grants and financial aid, they still have difficulty making ends meet. So a third of our students, you know, where can you cut corners? And you have to eat, that you can cut corners with food, but you have to pay tuition, you have to pay your housing, but books are certainly a place that you can cut corners or delay.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly where I think I would cut if I were, you know, struggling somewhere. Something's got to give.
Right.
But one third, that's a high percentage, and I'm sure that's typical of any kind of large institution like
UGA. I would think so, yeah.
Right. I know just what the College Board's data is telling us about how students are purchasing textbooks is that about a third of college students self-report that they never buy the textbook. Mm-hmm. So those numbers would at least align in that, I mean, I'm sure there are some students who can afford it who don't buy it anyway, but that there is a large number of students who are missing out on some of that and just not buying it.
It seems like there's no way that isn't going to affect you, though. You have text for the course for a reason, and if you
right.
can't get it, you probably are not doing as well in the course as you could.
Right.
Yeah, so we really see it as a teaching and learning issue. You know, mm-hmm. it's not just about saving students money or helping with a larger sort of financial aid strategy, but it having the students have all of the materials, as Deanna was describing, on the first day and throughout the semester, again, levels that playing field and doesn't give any student an unfair advantage. You may choose not to download the textbook, but from the surveys that we've done in our projects on campus, pretty much all students are indeed, if it's free, they'll take advantage of that opportunity, which certainly helps with their learning.
Right. Yeah, it seems like a win-win for everyone. But how are faculty getting used to this? And, you know, because, great, you can customize it, but that's actually maybe more work for faculty. How do you get them to appreciate the customization process when it takes maybe a lot of effort? Or how much effort does it take?
Well, I think the first question that faculty have is, okay, it's free, so how good can it be?
Mm-hmm. Good question, right?
So there is an initiative that we've partnered with out of Rice University called OpenStax, and Stax with an X on the end instead of CKS, so OpenStax. And they've been funded through the Arnold and Hewlett and Gates and a few other foundations to...
I think I've heard of those.
Yes.
I believe that those names carry a little recognition and prestige.
Yes, big names that are trying to do altruistic things in various parts of the world. So, for example, the Gates Foundation strategy regarding poverty in the United States is largely through education. And so the notion is, let's fund faculty to write these textbooks, let's fund faculty to edit these textbooks, and then let's give these textbooks away for free. So this is the initiative that it's not the only initiative that we're working with, but it's the one that probably takes up the largest percentage of our time. I think they've got, is it 19 now, Deanna, the number of textbooks?
Yes, a few of those are AP textbooks, so for use with high school courses, but they've got 12 different available textbook options that align with courses offered at UGA.
And typically what they focused on were, well, really the initiative focused on the notion of which courses are taught at every university all across the United States, regardless of institution. So we could probably list those really, really quickly, you know, pre-calculus, sociology, psychology, biology, chemistry, you know, on down the line. So these are...
Those don't change.
Right, the intro-level courses, right. And so that's what we've been working toward on our campus. And our strategy has been... Where are the intro courses that are large enrollment courses that have hundreds of students who are also using expensive textbooks? So it's really sort of the biggest bang for our effort would be to try to partner with faculty who teach those large classes with the expensive textbooks and try to transition them to the free textbooks. And that's really been what we've been up to for the last 2 or 3 years.
It's a massive undertaking. I mean, I know this is what you do. I know this is what you do, but this is really a large undertaking. There's a lot of effort and time going into this.
Yeah, there is. There is. And back to your question about sort of how do you incentivize faculty to participate, it's interesting. You go to a lot of the award-winning faculty on campus and you ask them about their experiences with textbook publishers. And many of them, especially those who teach large classes, they have a vendor a week knock on their door, literally come to their office and try to sell them on a technology or a textbook or the next big thing. And so faculty realize that vendors, publishers, see them as the vehicle through which they will profit. So if they can get a faculty member to adopt something, a technology or a textbook, well, when all of those students are required to purchase it, that's where they'll make their money. So faculty are starting to bristle at that notion that they're being
cash cows.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the faculty that we've been working with, they've been very excited to provide their time to engage in the process. Now, of course, time is sort of the biggest prize that I think we all struggle with. So we have been fortunate to, I think we've gotten 4 grants thus far. Three from the state and one through the Gates Foundation that have enabled us to provide resources for faculty to participate, either buying them out of a semester so that they can focus, buy them out of a course a semester, not the whole semester. We wish, wow. But so, you know, carve out maybe 10 hours a week where they could focus on a redesign with the textbook. And then we've provided either GA support or most recently through the hiring of Deanna in her position where she is partnering with faculty, doing a lot of the labor that's required of kind of getting the learning management system to look a certain way and to go through instructional design processes that I think not only make the transition to the free textbook, but also actually improve the quality of the course by using sort of well-researched and theoretically grounded principles in instructional design.
This is where it seems that this is definitely money well spent, because if you can take that faculty member out of a class for a few hours a week so that they can focus on getting that design together, mm-hmm. that's tremendous. So, and it benefits, the faculty member can do it without an extra burden, and the students will benefit because they can get the free resource that really
Absolutely.
Puts them, as you said, levels the playing field.
And there's a lot of great research showing as well that when faculty use an OER, that they continue to use it. So Eddie mentioned OpenStax, and they were actually here on campus with us earlier this week. And one of the things in their presentation that really stood out to me is they said right now they are recording a 97% retention rate of people using their texts. That is very high. So in their presentation, they mentioned with a traditional book, you're only going to see it around the 60s. So 60-something percent of faculty will continue with that, to use that text into the next year. And so I think that really speaks to, well, one, the OpenStax quality for sure, and that once faculty kind of see it and actually see, oh, okay, this looks good, maybe I recognize some of the names who contributed to this text, that it starts to be a little more reasonable to them than just when you go, okay, it's free, who wrote this, where did this come from? You know, they start to realize, like, oh, this is a professionally sourced open material. This is not crowdsourced like Wikipedia. This is professionally sourced.
Yeah, the difference is it's free, but it's high quality free,
right,
as opposed to just free and you get what
yeah.
you get.
Sure.
And Sherry, did you also come from a faculty background?
I come from a varied background, actually. I've worked with faculty. I do some teaching as well with graduate students on teaching with technology in the college classroom. But one of the things that I would like to add about the course redesign process is how exciting it is to watch a faculty member, when they do their course redesign, start to get excited about their material again. Mm-hmm. You know, with most of the faculty we work with, they're very high energy, very excited. But the fact that they can curate those materials specifically for their course goals and specifically for their students, it does rejuvenate their love of teaching. It reminds them, I think, why they're there. I mean, getting that opportunity to work with a graduate assistant who is trained in instructional design, most faculty don't get that. They don't have that instructional design training themselves. And so I think the faculty enjoy learning about teaching and learning.
That seems to keep it fresh for them.
Absolutely.
And that's more enjoyable for everybody.
Yes.
I know. I can get into a rut here. It's nice when something shakes me up. So I can definitely understand that. And I know that this really can, we were saying how it kind of levels the playing field for everyone. Does it lend itself, I guess, to more success in the classroom for the students and, I guess, in some ways the faculty mm-hmm. as well, just having the OERs?
Well, that's one of the arguments for OERs these days. And so there's research underway that's kind of determining, you know, what is the true element of student success. So one theoretical piece, maybe it's a research question, is if students aren't delaying taking courses because of the expensive textbook, you know, they sign up for 3 intro-level courses and just those 3 books together, maybe $800, so maybe they'll push the intro psych class off so they take the other 2. If they're not delaying taking courses, it seems like they might be able to graduate, you know, a semester or 2 earlier if they're not going through some kind of delay process. So theoretically, that could help.
And that could save a significant amount of money, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the delay. You know, it's that 4 years from now. Oh, well, it's 4 years from now. I'll go an extra semester. And often they don't know the formula yet to realize that that will indeed maybe lead to an extra semester or more time at the institution. But then there's also the notion that if you have the materials on day one, you're likely to do better on that first test than maybe if you didn't have access to those materials. So there's a percentage of students that we do believe it's likely to be helping them. So these are research questions that we're investigating and other mm-hmm. schools are investigating currently. So it'll be interesting to watch that research unfold over the next couple of years.
And how long have we been using this at UGA, taking advantage of OER?
Well, there was a project out of the Terry College of Business that Rick Watson, no relation, but a professor up in Terry College that began that had some free OERs, and there have been a couple of national projects. There was the Open Courseware Initiative out of MIT and the Merlot Project, and these have existed for over a decade, but there really hasn't been this uptick. Often because they were just sort of pieces of courses, and so you kind of have to go through, and it's like digging through a filing cabinet online to find something that may or may not fit your exact need. But the new textbook approach has really gained a lot of traction. As Deanna mentioned, we had OpenStax on campus on Monday, and they shared that through their initiative, they've saved about 57 million, they're estimating, across, I guess, the states.
Is that all, 57 million?
I was surprised. To be honest, I thought that was a little low given that we had 2 million in savings here.
I think that's a lot, but I'm not familiar with throwing around the million-dollar word like you are, Eddie.
Well, I'm not that comfortable with it. But so OpenStax, we at UGA have been working with OpenStax since 2013. So that's kind of when we kind of began that path.
But OpenStax was born in 2012. So I think that that's really great that UGA did go after that partnership so early, because Peggy Brookman in biology started using their biology text in 2013.
Yeah, she was our first partner, was Peggy.
And they love her at OpenStax. On their YouTube channel, they have videos with Peggy. So, yeah, that's definitely a partnership that they really like to talk up. And they also mentioned they've got, I think when they're talking about their numbers, they are in over 1,000 courses worldwide now. So people, again, with that adaptability, people around the world have taken their text and translated it and kind of added and customized. So it's really just kind of an amazing impact.
Well, we are running very low on time, but I want to ask maybe Deanna or Eddie if you want to quickly summarize where you hope we go here with OER.
Well, I think we do have a new feature that Deanna and I have been working on over the last month or two, and that while we've been very much working as a center to work with faculty and graduate assistants, we have a new director of university advising at the institution. We've charted a path on our website where students can go. So they could chart out as they come in as a freshman and go, okay, well, I can take intro soc, intro psych, intro biology, and then I will pay nothing for textbooks that semester. And so the advising arm of the university will now be sharing that information with their students, so especially those that are the most financially strapped.
Yeah. That is going to have to be the last word for today. I want to thank my panelists, Eddie Watson, Sherry Clouser, and Deanna Cozart with the Center for Teaching and Learning. To hear a podcast of this show, visit wuga.org. The opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect the views of WUGA. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ridley.